Hi, 103. How are you? Here we are in Chapter 7, chapter on costs and comparative advantage. I just going to look at two intuitive questions today, both kind of from my own life, just in the experiences that I have. Question number 10 is just one of my all-time favorite questions, and it's actually got an important idea behind it, namely the idea of sunk costs. Question reads, how long will you search for a $50 bill that you lost in your bedroom if the value of your time is $5 an hour? Suppose that you know with certainty that it's lost in your bedroom, that the value of your time remains $5 per hour no matter how long you look, and that you must look for the money in order to find it. Suppose also you think that your brother is going to pop into your room at any moment, and if he might find it, he'll take it. So you really do want to look for it. Your first reaction to this question is probably, well, it's $50. It cost me $5 for every hour I look, so I guess I'll look for 10 hours, right? I mean, that's the first reaction is that you'll look for 10 hours. But that's the wrong answer, right? That's the wrong answer. Now, why would you look at all for the money? Suppose you thought that you know the bill is in your room, and you think that if you look even for 1 minute, you're certain to find it. And so what would be the expected benefit? What's the expected benefit of looking for 1 minute? Well, it's basically you think for certain you're going to find the dollar bill, the $50 bill in the next minute. And so you're going to get $50. That's the benefit of looking for 1 minute. What's the cost? What's the cost of the expected cost of looking for 1 minute? Well, it's $5 an hour, but it's for 1 minute. So it's just equal to 12. So it's just a fraction, right? Of the amount of time that's available. There's nothing. The expected cost is nothing compared to the expected benefit. And so that implies the rational thing to do is to wait for 1 minute. Now, suppose a minute goes by. If a minute goes by and you didn't find the bill, but you still know it's in your room and you're going to find it in the next minute, what should your calculation be? Your calculation should be exactly the same. You say, well, I'm going to get $50 in the next minute, and it's only going to cost me a fraction of $5, right? It's going to cost me less than 50 cents to look. $50 is greater than 50 cents. Of course, I'll look, right? So the fact that you already look for 1 minute is irrelevant. It's irrelevant because the time that you've spent looking is sunk, right? It's sunk, and therefore it's irrelevant for your decision whether or not to continue looking or not. And now another minute goes by, another minute goes by. Suppose that 10 hours, your initial question, your initial answer, suppose 10 hours have gone by. I've looked for 10 hours for this $50 bill in my room. Highly unlikely, but suppose I did. I still think that the $50 bill is in my room. I still think I'm going to find it in any moment now. So if I still believe that, then the expected benefits of looking are still $50. And the expected cost is still just 1/12 of $5 under 50 cents. And so I'll keep looking. Now, had I at time zero, so here we are at time zero. At time zero, had I known that 10 hours would go by and I still would not have found my $50 bill, if I had known that right here, then I never would have started looking, right? The cost would have exceeded the benefits and I would never have started looking. But given that I find myself here, all of this time that I spent looking is sunk and irrelevant, and I will continue to look. When I'm working in my shop, I do this all the time. I'll put a pencil behind my ear, or I'll set my tape measure down, or I'll put a ruler over here. And then I can't remember where my pencil is. I know I just had it. And I'll look. And when do I stop looking? I stop looking when I found it. I know I just had it. I know it's right there. And so I look until I find it. So look until you find it is a behavior that we have because the time spent looking is sunk. Have you ever pushed an elevator button? How long do you wait for the elevator to come? You wait until it gets there for exactly the same reason. Sometimes you push the button and the elevator's right there. Oh, that's a windfall. Other times you push the button and you wait maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And that's not such a good deal. But given that you started waiting, you wait until the elevator gets there. When you graduate from Simon Fraser, you know, are you going to say to yourself, I'm going to look 3 days for a job. And if I don't find a job after 3 days, I'm going to stop. No. You look for 3 days. You didn't get a job. You say, well, what are the benefits of looking? Well, they're positive. What are the costs? They're not that big. I'll keep looking. And you look until you find a job. You look until you find a job because this time spent looking has already been sunk. Now, obviously, nobody looks 10 hours for a $50 bill in their room, and nobody waits forever for an elevator. So what's going on? What's going on is this. Suppose you push the elevator button and you wait a minute, you wait another minute, and you wait 3 minutes. What starts to go through your mind? It goes through your mind is, I don't think this elevator is actually working. And so if the elevator is not working, your expected benefits are not the $50 or whatever the benefit was. It's something that's much less. If the elevator is not working, then the expected benefit is zero. It's never coming. In which case, the costs are greater than the benefits and you go and take the stairs, right? Likewise, when you're looking for the $50 bill in your room, maybe you look for 1 hour. After 1 hour, you're probably going to say, I don't think this is in the room. Maybe my brother already got here and took it. In which case, you stop looking. So if the benefits start to fall, you might stop. The other thing that'll happen over time as you start looking a long time is costs start to rise. Would you wait 12 years for an elevator to come? No, right? You're going to get hungry. You're going to have other things to do. And so the costs start to rise. So as the benefit falls and the costs start to rise, you will stop looking. What this means is there's a tripping point. There's a tripping point at which you either start or stop looking. We call this in economics, this is a special name. It's called the reservation wage, or just the reservation price, I guess. Suppose you're going out to look for a job. You have some expectations of the benefits and some expectations of the costs. And so you have a rule. You're going to have a rule that whenever you come across a job that offers a certain wage rate, that wage will trip you into taking the wage rate. So you're going to stop until you reach some price, some wage rate or some price. You're going to search for a certain type of apple. You'll search until you hit some reservation point. We don't have to worry about how you'd calculate that, but it's got to do with your expected benefits and expected costs. All right. I'll do two questions this time. Here's another question to do with costs. Airlines are always trying to overbook their flights. This is not during the pandemic. During the pandemic, nobody's even flying. Airlines are always trying to overbook their flights. If a situation arises where not enough seats are available, then the airline bids for passengers to be bumped to another flight. As compensation to bump passengers, the airline supplies an additional ticket for any flight over the next year. Suppose an average airfare is worth $300. It seems likely that many passengers would be willing to wait for $100. Quite often, the wait's only 1 or 2 hours. And many times there is a flight to get bumped to. Why would the airline pay so much when it could pay less with cash? So the airline is giving you a $300, $400, $500 ticket, and you would have been willing to wait another hour for maybe $50, $60, right? Often you're flying, you've got nothing else to do. When you get home, it's not like you're going to be earning income immediately. So your costs of waiting are actually quite low. Why did they pay so much? Again, this comes from my life experience. I fly a fair amount, and every time I hear the person at the counter saying, well, ladies and gentlemen, we've overbooked the flight, I immediately get up out of my seat and I start to run to the counter desk because I know they're going to be offering a ticket. And in the 30 plus years that I've been flying, I have never won the race to the front counter. There's always other people that beat me to it, because there's always so many people for which the $600 ticket is way too much of a compensation for the for the amount of time they're waiting. Well, what's the answer here? Why do the airlines do this? And the airlines do this because most costs of a flight that's taking off are sunk. When that airline takes off, the fuel is paid for, the airline is leased, the airplane is leased, the food on the plane is all paid for, the wages are all paid for, everything is sunk. And so if there is one seat sitting empty on that plane, that is just lost revenue to the airline. If they could get somebody sitting in that seat, it's pure revenue to them. Alternatively, if that plane is leaving and the seat is empty, right, the cost of having you sit in that seat is zero for the airline. They don't incur any marginal costs of you sitting on that plane, right? It's sort of like SFU and having a lecture hall. SFU has a lecture hall that holds 500 people, and there's 300 students in the class. All the expenses have been paid for that class. Professor's been paid, light bill's been paid, building's been paid. It costs Simon Fraser nothing to have you sit in that seat. And so when the airline gives you a ticket that's worth $300, you can only use that ticket, right, if there's an empty seat in the next flight. So they gave you something that's worth $300 to you, but costs nothing to them. That induces a lot of people to rush and be very happy about giving up their seat on an overbooked flight, but it costs the airline nothing. Whereas if the airline was to give you $100 cash, well, that's cost them $100. And so the mystery is resolved by understanding the nature of sunk costs. All right. Have a nice day. See you next time.